The next case is 98-12-91, Monica Holzinger versus Jordan Urbanski.
This must be an offering occurrence up in Toledo.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Good morning.
Michigan.
The court greetings from northwestern Ohio, just south of the Michigan border, which we hear the facts of this case. The complaint in this case raised claims which plainly could have and should have been heard and decided by a Michigan probate court. Holzmer failed to bring those claims in the Michigan probate court and instead now brings this action in Ohio, seeking a determination of the very matters which were proper subjects for decision by the Michigan court.
How was she notified of the pending Michigan probate matter?
Justice Resnick, the documents attached to the motion for summary judgment in this case show that she was served with the notice of commencement, also served with papers during the course of that hearing, and was served with the conclusion notice, indicating that within 30 days the probate matter would be closed unless further action was taken. So she was served with papers during the entire course of that 7-month probate.
Did they form the will into a second in violence
trust? Inter-violence trust, yeah.
So the property was already in the inter-violence trust, or
yes.
It didn't pour over until the line of the death?
That's my understanding, correct.
Isn't qualitatively and quantitatively the Michigan probate practice different than Ohio? The administration of the state.
I am not probated in the state of Michigan, so I can't.
Well, we have an absolute one in the Lucas County Probate Court, and if you go up to Monroe, you've got a whole different procedure, haven't you?
You're correct. The procedure is different, but there are some similarities. This was an abbreviated proceeding. In Ohio, has. Likewise, its own abbreviated proceedings.
Well, when you release a state from administration.
Correct.
But that wasn't this.
Correct. This was a little bit more than that. This went through several months of violence. So, yes, there are some pleading differences, clearly.
Did a judge sign the order in Michigan?
Did a judge sign the order? I'm not
sign sure. It. Sign it.
There was an entry filed by the clerk indicating that the probate matter was concluded. And that was served upon the plaintiff.
The clerk signed it.
Yes, correct.
There was no judicial recognition of an order.
Your Honor, I think you want to call it a judgment entry signed by a judge. Probably not. Clearly was an order, a judicial proceeding, which under Michigan law was perfectly proper. Proper notice was given. Everyone knew that the matter was being probated, that the will was being probated, and that if there was anyone who wanted to contest any part of the probate, the trust, whatever, clearly that was the time to bring her voice forward.
Does Ohio have to place full faith and credit in that type of entry?
Yes, I believe it does.
Why?
Because of the judicial proceeding.
You just told me a clerk signed it.
Yeah, it's a public record, a judicial proceeding, put whichever moniker you want on it. If you want to call it a judgment entry, as the appellate court below did, that's fine by me, too. Whatever label you want to put on it, it is entitled under the broad definition of full faith and credit, which includes not just judgment entries. In fact, this court gave raised judicata effect to a zoning matter in one of its prior decisions.
That's the Brown case?
That's correct.
And that was not a judicial order, correct?
That's correct.
It was not a judgment entry?
That's correct.
But we did get full faith and credit.
That's correct.
Would the notice to Appley in this case of probating in Michigan have told her that the properties in question were part of the probate proceedings? She wouldn't have known that from the motion.
Would not have told her much of anything, other than the estate was being probated, correct? And that all matters relating to probate, including the will and the deeds, which she was aware of, were, going to be part of that distribution. But that was all being right at that point in time.
Anything with regard to the trust?
anything in the notice with regard to the trust? I don't believe so.
Yeah, but the trust was seeking to be probated, at least the assets, weren't they?
Correct.
Mr. Zuhari,
yes.
It seems that the interesting part of this case may not really be before us. The Court of Appeals seems to have decided this case on a procedural basis. And that, you read the whole opinion and it comes to a one paragraph where it seems to me the court says, eventually says, the trial court was wrong to say it was divested of jurisdiction. It said it should, and it gives a couple things. It said, as soon as the Michigan proceedings were over, there was concurrent jurisdiction, so Ohio, this court in Toledo, could have taken jurisdiction at that point. It said, but whatever was done in Michigan gets full faith and credit, and that res judicata applies. But it finally says, but we decide this case based on the 12B6 issue, which does not permit the raising of res judicata as a 12B6 matter, and therefore judgment for your opponent.
That was the, I think you're referring to the first appellate decision.
Uh-huh.
And then that decision was read, frankly, by everyone to mean, okay, we need to do a summary judgment. We can't raise res judicata motion, isn't that? So back we went.
All right. And then
the summary judgment was filed, and then we went back up and appeal again. And then if you read the second opinion by Judge Scherr, for the first 5 or 6 pages, I go right along with it. Yeah, you're right on. This is right. This is what you said the first time. And then you take what I think is the detour away from GRABA, and only those claims which were required to have been raised are the ones which are barred. And that's where I believe an error was made. I believe the standard is could or should have been.
He contends, though, that they were not compulsory common funds and they didn't have to be raised.
They were not required. Correct. That is, he defined it in the counterclaim context and said, therefore.
So, how do you respond to that allegation?
I say that is not what Gravis said, that is not what Springdale says, that is not what this court has earlier decisions said. Yeah, the issue is could or should have been raised. And clearly, all of these claims could or should have been raised so that the Michigan probate hearing could decide all these issues. The alternative, what we're faced with is piecemeal litigation. Let us suppose for a moment in our very global society that we've got several heirs who are located in several states. We're not just dealing with Ohio and our neighboring city. Are we going to allow several different claims by several different heirs after the probate estate has been closed?
Now, you're not familiar with the Michigan practice, so you're probably not going to be able to respond to my question, but I'm wondering if these issues could have been handled in the Michigan proceedings as it was commenced. That's really a question. That's really my question.
We set forth in our brief, but Justice Resnick, that they could have been, and that the Michigan statute clearly has sections that allow for each of the claims brought. And I think my opponent will concede that, except for maybe one of the claims, the last claim, which is really sort of a will contest action. And we also believe, and indicating our brief, that that clearly is something that falls within your usual probate matter. So our answer to that question is yes, these all clearly
could have been raised
in
that proceeding that was started in Michigan.
Yes.
Okay. But there had to be a conversion to proceeding, wouldn't there?
Yes.
And that would place the burden on the party who wishes to raise the counterclaim, I guess.
If you wanted to note it as a counterclaim. Sure. And I guess we can agree, the bottom line is the Michigan court system certainly was competent to handle all these claims, whether it was the probate division or the general division or some combination.
Well, but those properties in question, two real properties, I guess, or whatever number there are, were in the trust already. Wouldn't you have had to have attacked the conveyance at the time of the setting up of the trust, as opposed to doing it in a judicatory proceeding in the probate court? I read all the citations from the Michigan probate statute, and I was wondering how I would have gone and tried to say that the transfer of those properties was subject to duress, undue influence, and that's contended. I don't know how I would have done that in the probate proceeding.
You're suggesting that it would have, should have been done even earlier, this time of the conveyance?
No, I'm suggesting it could not have been done in the Michigan probate proceeding. Maybe it should have been done earlier, but maybe you wouldn't know that earlier. Maybe you don't have the doctor coming forward and saying until late in the game that the testator or the settlor was incompetent.
Again, I can only rely on the citations made in our brief, Justice Douglas, which indicated the Michigan statute sections that, at least to us, could be able to handle those claims.
Which part do you think that fits into the Michigan probate statute? The closest I could come to it was...
You're in the 700s here.
Yeah, 700.221.
Okay.
Has concurrent legal and equitable jurisdiction of the following matters to determine property rights and interests, which seems a bit amorphous, but...
We've also cited 21 and 22, and it may well be one of those two.
Okay.
Do I have any time?
Yes, when the white light is on, you have 2 minutes. When the red light is on, the cord drops out from under you. So. You have some time. I'm not sure how much time you have.
Are you out of things to say?
No.
Oh.
Are you out of questions? I just wanted to refer the court briefly to its own history in this matter. Justice Sweeney Douglas, resident in Pfeiffer in the Teachers Association case, cited Grava with approval. Justices Moyer, Sweeney, and Cook were part of the majority in Grava and gave very good policy reasons for why race judicata should be given effect, and it certainly applies in this case. Justices Moyer, Sweeney, Douglas, and Reston were part of the majority in Springdale and indicated that exceptions to race judicata should be narrowly construed, and I think what the appellate court below did was quite the opposite. Justice Sweeney wrote the opinion in Zoo Trust versus Santa Barbara, which our office was involved in. And in that case, the California proceeding was not proper and entitled to full faith and credit. And that applied equally to this case. The Wyatt case, Wyatt v. Wyatt, was an Alaska decision on child support. This court found it was entitled to full faith and credit and application of race judicata. Justices Douglas and Resnick dissented in that case. Feeling that the Alaska court had no authority to do what it did, and I don't think there's any denying in this case the Michigan court did have authority to do what it did, so we haven't had an issue here. Bottom line, the Michigan probate court had jurisdiction to hear each claim, which is now raised, and the trial court, we believe, properly held, it could not now hear those claims.
Thank you, Mr. Zahar. Mr. Cole.
And please, of course, I think I can summarize the essence of my case in 30 seconds. 3 points. Number one, our claims were not compulsory counterclaims in the Michigan Probate Administration. Number two, the certificate of rendered by the Michigan Court was not final judgment on merits. And number three, the core facts the Michigan administration were entirely different from the core facts raised by our case.
I'd like you to expand on that statement. That's
core facts?
That's, yes, I'm wondering about that.
Our case involved non-probate assets. The Michigan administration involved probate assets. Our case involved, was guided by the document of the trust and deeds, and the estate was guided by the will. Our case involved $1.2 million, the estate involved $21,000. Those are the main, also, in our case, the ultimate issues was whether there was undue influence, incompetency, etc. None of those issues were ever raised in the probate court.
Well, but the question is, should they have been raised in the probate court? We know they weren't, but they could they have been? That's, isn't that the question?
Okay.
Why could they not have been raised there?
I think that some of our issues could have been raised in the probate court, but not necessarily in the probate proceedings.
Should that be a major distinction?
It's a terrific distinction. The statute gives authority to the probate court of Michigan to hear some of our claims, not all of them, but some of them. But there's no compulsion to raise them during the probate administration. And in fact, there's a lot of law saying that all of our claims could have been raised after the probate estate is done. The Powell case allows asset transfers to be challenged after they close the estate. The Van Line case out of Michigan allows a will to be challenged after the estate is completed.
Counsel, when did he draw the will? The same time as the trust documents?
Yeah, it was a last-minute deal 5 months before he died, at a time when he was feeble, changing his whole estate.
So he did the will then as well?
A will, the trust, the second trust, contradicting his prior irrevocable trust, and the deed.
Where I'm going is, okay, is the question to Chief Justice and Justice was raised about where can and where is the appropriate place to raise all the issues you need to raise to get at the larger assets. I realize if you just contest the will, that affects $26,000 worth of assets. If you filed that action and got a determination that there was undue influence in terms of drafting the will, presumably that finding might lop over into a finding with respect to the deeds to transfer into the trust. But where
should we raise it?
Yeah.
I'm saying we could have raised some of them in Michigan. We also could have raised them in Ohio.
Would that action have been in the probate court in Michigan, or would it have been in the court of general?
Some of our claims, I don't think the tort claim could be, or there's a big question mark as to whether our tort claim of intentional interference could be raised in the probate court. Also, the deed from my client to her father, if that claim is successful, the benefit doesn't run to the estate, enhance the estate. So an argument could be made that could not be raised in the probate court. It should be in the general division court. So you got a mess here, like we often have in Ohio, where you got some of the claims in one court, some of the claims in the other.
I think the absence of the same question was prejudice. The way I'm starting to see it is she wanted to attack the truck because she felt that all the stuff that was done at the end was fraudulent, right?
Yeah, well, fraudulent, undue influence, and count.
Okay, if she successfully attacks the truck,
right,
then don't go back, that come out of the truck to become part of the estate.
Now, that's good, very good question.
Now,
and the answer is part yes and part no. If she succeeds on the invalidity of her deed, it doesn't go into the estate, it goes back to her.
That's only a small part.
Well, that's one part.
But the rest of it would go back to her.
Not the rest. If she succeeds on the invalidity of the two funeral home businesses, the cash accounts and the investment account, under his prior trust, which was irrevocable, it would have gone back into that irrevocable trust. It would not have gone into the estate. The only thing that would go back into the estate is if she succeeds in knocking out the deeds from the father to the sons. So most of it wouldn't go back into the estate.
If some of it went back, you're into the very reason we have to take the credit is that you put it all in the estate, you resolve it all here, so that all these issues
It sure was. No question.
full faith and credit was that public act, record, and judicial proceedings.
So we're trying to attack what happens in the courts. You can't do that in a court proceeding.
No, not a judicial proceeding, but a very court. Sure, it's in the probate court. That doesn't make it a judicial proceeding.
It doesn't say judicial entry, it doesn't say judgment order, it says judicial proceeding, and you have a proceeding, you call it that several times just now,
right.
And you have it in the court.
I agree with that. So is the marriage certificate. The point here is not whether it's accorded.
Isn't the marriage certificate entitled to full faith?
Yes, but it's not entitled to res judicata effect. That's the point. A marriage certificate is not entitled to res judicata effect because it's not a judicial proceeding.
Well, if you got married again in another state, you just had a marriage certificate in state A, certainly you'd be in trouble, wouldn't you? In some sort of effect.
I agree that we have to give it full faith and credit. I'm just saying the issue wasn't litigated in Michigan. If anybody knows the effect of this judgment, it is the judge out of whose court it arose. And he signed an affidavit attached to the first page of my supplement saying it's not a judgment. The deputy clerk does not have authority to render a judgment. And in fact, the Michigan statute authorizing this proceeding said that it's non-judicial.
Proceeding.
Doesn't
say judgment for entry. It says proceeding.
I agree. That goes to full faith and credit. I have no problem with full faith and credit. The problem I have is giving this proceeding res judicata effect.
What's the difference between full faith and credit and res judicata?
Res judicata is where the parties have a hearing and they fight out the issue. There was no hearing. They never got into the trust. They never got into the inter vitals transfers. There was never a hearing. In Grava, there was a hearing, even though it was quasi-judicial.
But they could have.
Even if they did, it would be separate from the probate estate. There would be a separate file, separate case number, separate court costs, exactly. Separate dockets.
And the proceeding for determining the estate would have been held in abeyance, so those issues would be resolved, so they would know what to do with the estate. Correct? If you in fact all this other stuff, they certainly would go forward and probate the rest of the estate and conclude it when they have all these other issues hanging out there.
I agree that some of my issues could have been raised in Michigan, but Michigan law, the analysis, the trouble with their analysis is they're using a Grava analysis and assuming that we were the same in the first and second case. In the first case, the proceeding in Michigan, we were not in the plaintiff's position, we were in the defendant's position. And therefore, because we didn't bring it, their attorney brought it. And therefore, the question, Judge Shirk has got it right, is did we have a compulsory duty to raise a counterclaim in that case? And Michigan law says, no, we don't. We can raise it after the estate is closed. Trusts go on for years and years. There's issues about trusts that come up way after the estate is closed.
When the application of probate was filed in Michigan, did you represent the appellee? Your client.
I didn't get involved in the case until about a couple of weeks before they filed it. When I got involved, I tried to settle this case because family members shouldn't be fighting, and they ran over and snuck into that court and filed that document.
Okay. Now, they filed the probate action in Michigan after you had already been retained as counsel. Did you enter an appearance up there?
No.
Did you file any motion to expand the proceeding?
No.
Did you?
Required.
And why wasn't it required? Because all they were doing is probating the $25,000 that goes through the will. Is that your point?
Why get involved in it? Why make this harder than it was? Just address the real issues which were in the probate court. They involved the
But if you address the real issues, you can city government issues free up property, but what heck is it?
He seems to have it in these books. Oh, yes. That's right.
Michigan law allows us to do all this stuff after you see it. So why do we not? And what we were trying to do at the time, frankly, is to prevent World War III.
He's always, it's a woman faster than his head when he's speaking.
You know, what they were doing is sneaking in from the court to present that meeting. I didn't get personally notified. I think I found out about it about a week before the thing was closed.
Or he didn't find out.
No, they did give her notice.
And they knew you were involved in the case?
Yeah, they knew I was involved.
They just didn't know.
They also didn't file a federal estate tax return until 6 or 7 months after they closed the estate. They closed it prematurely to process our case. They did. It's not a final judgment. It just simply was not the judgment. The Grau analysis doesn't apply if we're in the position of a defendant. The notice to Monica at the beginning of this estate was not made by the court. It was made by the lawyer's secretary. It was made by ordinary mail. There were no warnings in that notice that you're going to be prejudiced not only as to the will, but potential claims that you may want to bring. What kind of notice is that? There was no deadline. She was not required to file an answer. She didn't file an answer. Normally, compulsory counterclaims are only required when, in fact, you have to file an answer. No answer was required in the Michigan proceedings.
Was she aware at the time of the subsequent trust, of the trust at the time that the probate proceeding was filed in Michigan?
I don't know. You know, that was all done on the sly. And incidentally, the lawyer, Mr. Nowicki, had been her lawyer, represented her in a bunch of things, and when she was asked by him to sign those deeds, she trusted him. And she wanted to please her father. She had no clue.
Counsel, this really is nothing in the record. It seems unfair to be mentioning a lot of things.
It's in her affidavit.
Okay. But it's not at issue here today.
Whose
lawyer was who?
It is for me.
It's been argued throughout this whole case. And
yes.
If you look at my affidavit, which is about the third or fourth document, my supplement, they were sliding this over on her. And not telling me about it, not telling her about it. I don't know when she found out about the trust. It was a pretty darn sneaky process, I can tell you that. The core issues are different. Michigan probate court has jurisdiction over some issues, but those issues don't have to be filed during the state administration. I think they're race judicata has to be balanced with fairness. Fairness is part of race judicata. If you want judicial efficiency and you want to forget about fairness, you can just dismiss all your cases. You'll have a very efficient system, but it won't be a fair system. And if you want to have fairness, I think in light of the horrible notice that was given, the sneaky way they acted, the fact that it wasn't a compulsory counterclaim, and placing upon us the duty to convert. When you look at all that stuff together, experience would say, "Shut it, yet here." And finally, I have no objection to full faith and credit. All I'm saying is that race judicata does not apply to non-judicial acts.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Zahari, you saved a little over 2.5 minutes of your time. You may want to begin by telling us whether you're sneaky and sly.
I won't take 2.5 minutes.
Somebody representing your client.
That's exactly where I was going to come. I think the word was used at least several times.
We're aware that you were not.
You are not the attorney, but.
Why? I might not even say it personally. I can call it worse, frankly.
Well, since it's not an issue for me, may I ask another sort of question? I'm interested in the Court of Appeals relies on the restatement and makes the point that the restatement distinguishes between, on the subject of claim preclusion and issue preclusion, distinguishes between the complaints and counterclaims and compulsory or non-compulsory nature of counterclaims. Well, the Court of Appeals relies on Section 22 of the restatement. And what do you say is inappropriate about that reliance, Mr. Zuhari?
I think the issue, for us, the issue is not so much whether you put a moniker or a claim for defendant or for complaint or counterclaim. The issue is, as previously framed, was the issue something that could or should have been raised, or whatever moniker you want on it, if it does fall within that parameter. And here again, we're talking about an action where the plaintiff defendant lines are not, frankly, so black and white. Who's got what claim against whom? If it falls within that arena, then I believe race judicata applies. And the discussion that
we don't, okay, had, but it's true, the restatement does distinguish between plaintiffs,
correct,
and defendants and,
correct,
and their roles, and there's a reason for that.
Correct.
And in this case, it's conceded that the appellee would have had to actually bring in a different convert the action to a more adversarial nature in Michigan.
Correct.
And maybe that's equivalent of making her a counterclaimant. Do you say that we just go back to the language of Graba and we just don't attend to this kind of analysis in the restatement?
The issue is, was she required to bring at that time? The answer that I have is, I don't know.
Required only to the extent that should she be precluded if she does not, if she is foreclosed, if she is not.
Yes,
she's, of course she's not required, but,
but
is she to be foreclosed?
Yeah, if it's something that could or should have been raised at that time, raised judicata, and allowing issues to be decided at one time, bringing finality, avoiding multiple litigation, perhaps over several states, there is some value to that, to finality, to certainty, to having them all raised and decided so that we are not sitting here as we are today, second guessing what was Michigan do, what was Michigan not do, what falls with them, what falls with that. I mean, the very particular exercise we've gone through, to me, says this is why raised judicata is full faith and credit applies. The issue that I, the question that, again, I take exception in the front legs, but not to the sneaking discussion, because proper notice was given throughout. There was nothing improper or fraudulent about the Michigan proceeding in any way. Notice was properly given, and the fair decision, frankly, is a two-way street here, and must be considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harry. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Thank you for your assistance.